Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hi, this is Ryan Fraser.
This is Troy Daney.
This is Gus Boyett.
This is Don Hutchison.
This is Jürgen Klopp, and you're listening to The Big Interview with Graham Hunter.
Thank you, Jürgen. I travelled to all these interviews from Barcelona, and our socios, our beloved members, keep us on the road. This independent podcast would not happen without them. Please go to patreon.com/Graham Hunter right now to become a socio, to become one of our members, and get an extra big interview every month, plus loads of bonus content. So go to patreon.com/Graham Hunter, patreon.com/Graham Hunter, and we'll bring you joy.
When it comes to The Big Interview, one of the great privileges is that I get to invite people I like. Now, that isn't programme sellers often, or pie sellers, or kit men. It's often footballers, managers. And in this instance, you've been watching Micah Richards on Sky or on Match of the Day since, I don't know, 2006, 7, 8, and you're still seeing him on those shows now because, sadly, an excellent career was truncated by injury. However, what he's proved is that he's exceptional at analysing football, talking about the sport he loves on television, and therefore we asked him to join us in The Big Interview. And our guest was, of course, a Premier League winner with Manchester City. Now, he's popular in what he does. The range of football shows where he's popping up indicate that television thinks he's great. The full episode with Micah Richards is exclusive to socios of The Big Interview at patreon.com/Graham Hunter, the most enjoyable forward slash you'll ever have. And it's at that site you can sign up for additional content and lots of interaction with me and the producers of the show. Tell friends, please. Everybody's welcome. In this, which is a shorter edit of the interview with Micah, you're about to hear a remarkable inside account of the making of England's champions in 2012, starring, who else? Roberto Mancini, Mario Balotelli, Manchester United, and Micah himself. Micah Richards. First of all, thank you very much for getting out your scratcher early this morning, driving south, coming here and putting up with us. Thank you for this beautiful tea.
Thanks for putting up with me.
Now we've got more important subjects than transporting tea to speak about. Everybody in their lives, literally, well, everybody that we respect and might listen into this, aims for something, usually aims to be good at something, the best at something, or to triumph. You're a champion of England. You're a winner. Even though, you know, it's now a couple of weekends ago that that mad moment happened, how many times in a week or in a month, or when you wake up, or when you've had an awful day, or when you wake up and you pull the curtains and the sun's shining and you just go, yeah, 92nd minute and 30 however many seconds in Kuna. What's the abiding feeling of having reached the epitome of what you started to do. How does it stay with you? Does it manifest itself? Or is it just like only when some idiot like me asks you about it that it comes to the surface again?
No, because I'm now in media, I get asked it probably every week.
Right.
What was that moment like? It was difficult for me because it was a bittersweet moment in terms of I played all the season and I picked up a hamstring injury. Mm. So Zabaleta came in and was doing really well. So the last five games, I didn't actually start. I always came on. And if there was one game I wanted to play, was that the final game against QPR. And because Mancini didn't want to change a winning side, and I was his number one choice throughout the season, it was difficult for me to take. But then it was a moment when we went behind against QPR. It was, we're in this together. You know what I mean? It's a team game. It's not put all your personal accolades aside and your personal feelings aside, because we're in this together. And people always ask me, it's different for me because when you're playing with the likes of David Silva, Yaya Toure, company, it's sort of in their destiny. You know, they were like natural talents, if you know what I mean. They was always going to make it to the top, no matter, as long as they stayed on the straight and narrow. Mm-hmm. Whereas I come through the academy, and when Mancini came in, he didn't really know. I mean, he knew my name because I'd played for England and whatnot, but I wasn't a star player, so I had to almost work twice as hard to show him what I could do. So for me to then go and lift the Premier League, you know, and being at Man City since I was 14, it's like the best feeling in the world. And some people try brush it aside like, well, you was in a good team, but I had to work so hard to just stay amongst that squad. So for me, it will mean a lot more.
What was the process of convincing him like? Because it's obvious you would rely on, you know, you look at him and you say, well, Mike, I know what I do well, do what you do well. But presumably you have to size him up, you have to listen to him, he has to take a little look at you. And what we're used to learning about when you unwrap professional sport a little bit, there's always crazy little moments of one kind or another, because after all, it's all people. So Mancini comes in and you go, okay, there are others who'll immediately get a shove into the first team from him. I've got to convince him. What was that process mutually like between him and you?
It was difficult at the start because he had his favourites. Balotelli was his favourite, and he used to get away with murder. You know, I've said it time after time. But what people don't understand about Balotelli, he was one of the nicest people ever. And Mancini saw that me and him got on really well. So he thought, all right, let's see how this plays out. Mm-hmm. And it was the initial friendship with Mario which allowed me to get in with Mancini, if you know what I mean. So he helped me massively. I remember talking to Balotelli all the time. He said the manager really thinks you're a nice guy, because I just get on with my business. I don't really get involved with politics and stuff like that. I just say it how it is. I work hard in training. If you like me, you like me. If you don't, then, you know. But it was, you know, I owe a lot to Balotelli for sort of smoothing over that relationship, because at the start, I don't think Mancini rated me, if I was being totally honest. He thought I had good attributes, but I don't think he thought I could turn into a world-class performer. Do you know what I mean? I don't want to say world-class, because world-class to me, you know, I think of Ronaldinho, Ronaldo and all them sort of players. So I don't class myself world-class, but in that season, I performed world, you know, at the world-class level, in my opinion. Not saying I was world-class. And it was all down to Mario Balotelli.
Micah, in these podcasts, I don't often talk about hair or hairstyles, and you can see why. it doesn't really work for me. I mean, I feel like non-drivers can opine about Formula One, you know, and just because I've opted for a different look. But it does kind of leave me a little... I mean, this is turning into a sub-story, but there's a lot of hair products I can't speak about. Do you hear me? And I don't know if you already know where I'm going, but you and Mario adopted the same barber. Because we're going to talk a lot about a certain 6-1 game. And in that game, the two of you have got just what looks like, I don't know if it's a little hedgehog here. Arturo Vidal's nicked it off you. Did you do it for each other? What was it?
Used to call it the Mohawk, didn't we?
Did.
Or Mohican. Everyone used to call us twins. Although I was a better looking twin.
He listens so, Mario, so you might want to just say, I'm kidding, mate, or whatever.
I'm not Chabelle. And in that era, it was just a fashionable thing, and we both just ran with it.
Was it about speed?
No, I was quick enough. I was quicker than him, so maybe he was using it for speed, but I was quick enough anyway. But yeah, we just... He had some crazy hairstyles. Mm-hmm. I had one or two, maybe three. But yeah, we just, you know, we was only young then. I think, how old was I then? 23? Yeah. I think he was 21 around that time. Yeah. So you're going through that stage where you're trying different hairstyles, but I wouldn't wear that now.
Life's got to be a laugh. if you're doing everything else seriously, like which you must have done training and your attitude to work, as you said, life's got to be a laugh on this.
Yeah.
When you find the... Sorry, go back here again. When you find the fringes, you've got to have a laugh. But there's a picture in my mind because if you're all right with it and you like him,
yeah.
Can we stop a little bit and try and tell people... just paint Balotelli a little bit more as a picture, because I obviously don't know him particularly well, but I've had a couple of lucky experiences in that he came to do a big show for, I'm sure it was Nike, in Barcelona, and we got an invite. And the idea was that to launch these new boots, there was a massive, it was a sort of factory, there was a massive wall, but they'd made it a sort of tactile wall so that the ball would hit it and it would interact. There were certain things that would... So there was Marco Reus, World Cup winner, Borussia Dortmund, exceptional footballer. There was Cesc Fabregas, World Cup winner, exceptional footballer. Thierry Henry was the host. Blah, blah, it's the same thing. World Cup winner, exceptional footballer. He wasn't really supposed to join in because he was hosting, but he did join in. And there was Mario. And they had about five tasks. And it literally was... It was an interaction. For example, one was you had to do a little dribble and bend the ball and knock bricks out of the wall for points. But there were four or five drills like that would be done at pace, and it was competitive. And of course they were there for the money and the... But you were footballers... The instant that it's on, everybody's walled on a set. Now I'm on too. And Mario Balotelli won every drill by a street. And in my opinion, people remember him first probably for unrealised potential, secondly for japes, thirdly for powerful goals. But that fella was, to my eye, had enormous skill too.
He was incredible, one of the most talented footballers I've ever played with. I feel a little bit sorry for Mario at times because he doesn't help himself on one hand, but the other hand, he's had a tough upbringing. You know, obviously he was adopted. And that, you know, I've got friends who are adopted as well, and they tell me, like, you know, they think about it every day. It plays on their mind. Mm-hmm. And I think with Mario, I think... He's going through things that people don't really know about, and he's getting judged upon that. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you know, he's got to take responsibility himself as well and try not to put himself in these positions because, yeah, he's underachieved massively because he's one of the best I've ever played with. But I feel like if there's ever a blame, he's always the one that gets it, rightly or wrongly. Because... Like you said, that, you know, the tasks that I did there, we would do that in training every single day. And I think some managers just found it frustrating that he wouldn't always show it on the pitch. Mm-hmm. But we all see what he can do. We see what he did in the Euros. He gets one assist at Man City that helps us win the league. He scored some terrific goals at AC Milan. He did well in his first spell in France as well, and then it sort of petered out when him and Vieira didn't see eye to eye at Nice. And, you know, he's back home in his hometown of Brescia now, and he's actually scored a few important goals as well, but I just feel like he doesn't know how to play his cards right, if you know what I mean, because he's so powerful and social media is so powerful now. Anything that he does is going to be taken out of context.
You're a hard worker, you're an honest man, and you excelled in your football career. There's no two questions about it, no two ways about it. And you said you were friendly with him, that you liked each other, that was a feeling. Was there a small part of the solidity your friendship gave him, or even just working together day to day, that partly why some of the best football we've seen from Mario came at City?
I just think whenever I was doing an interview, or I would always try protect him because I knew what the real Mario was like. And all he needs is someone who, you know, he did so well, not maybe because of me with the friendship, because Mancini believed in his ability. You know, when you've got a manager who believes in you, you can do what you want in the game. You know, people would, you know, outside of Man City would say, oh, he shouldn't be playing, Don't forget, we had strong strike force, Aguero, Tevez, Dzeko and Balotelli as well at the same. So he couldn't play every game, but that season he made huge impact. And I'd say it wasn't down to more me. I think it was down to more Mancini. But Mancini was just brutally honest with him. But it was like his son as well.
Because Mancini is not an ordinary football man, in my opinion, by any means. He was also, for those who listen to this and only remember him as a manager, I'm old enough to have seen him as a player, and he was off the scale good. Off the scale. People thought Totti was brilliant. Mancini was, in all honesty, he didn't play for as long, but he was twice the player.
Really?
Mancini was off the scale. Just wow. Like a football Rolls Royce, but with a sort of Ferrari brain, elegant too. When they won the title at Samp, and him and Viale, they ripped Italian football apart and played in a different style, because they were coming from an era which was much more cautious and much more percentage, and they weren't like that at all. And yeah, he's turned out to be a really interesting manager, but also a very stubborn, very opinionated man too. He's not your normal football man, I don't think.
No, I, being brutally honest, it was half the change room that loved him and half the change room that hated him, and I think that's probably why he left in the end, because I think he'd lost the changing room. I loved him. I loved how brutally honest he was with me. I loved how long he spent on the training ground with me. He was a perfectionist. It's difficult now because the modern player, you have to put your arm around a lot more. Whereas old school, I had Stuart Pearce. He was hard as nails. He'd tell you straight, you know. And for some reason, I reacted better to managers who would just tell me how it is. Do you know what I mean? Don't sugarcoat it. But Mancini sort of fell out with the wrong players in the dressing room. And I think that was the reason, you know, that they couldn't see eye to eye in the end. Because, like you said, he is opinionated. He is a perfectionist. He would be in at 6 o'clock in the morning and sometimes not leave till 11 o'clock until he was happy. But I love that about a manager, because he's willing to go to places that other managers won't go to. Let's have it right. Mancini brought a trophy to Man City, and it took 40 years. He's the first manager to do that. FA Cup, the next season, Premier League. And we can talk about Pellegrini, we could talk about Pep Guardiola in terms of his style of football he plays, and, you know, winning back-to-back titles. But you know, we was up against Arsene Wenger and Sir Alex Ferguson. You know, top managers. And Mancini to come over here and do that. Like, you know, you said at the start, then, you know, how important it was to win a Premier League for a player. But arguably, he's done something greater than what any player's done, because he's up against top managers in one of the hardest leagues. And that's why he has my full support whenever speaking about him. And I know he was a difficult character, but it works for some players and it doesn't work for others.
I don't know if it's unwillingly, but I want to drag you back to the season in which you became a champion of England. It doesn't sound so bad when I say it. I feel there's a legitimate reason.
It's got a nice ring to it, hasn't it?
There you go. Even for me, I've got goosebumps and everything. Listen, everybody loved watching it. There's a couple of things I want to draw your opinion on. Because, you know, City United is a big thing. People would argue, and you were born in Birmingham, you grew up in Leeds, but you were here pretty early, so you kind of know the city quite well. You spent a big chunk of your working life here. So United-Liverpool is a big thing, and City-Liverpool wasn't for a long time, and then it became so, because your two seasons, you've touched on something that Neil and I have been preparing this, because honestly, we do prepare a little bit. You might not assume it. We thought the splitting the atom moment probably wasn't the money coming in, or actually Mancini arriving, or even Sonny Devitt's. Probably the splitting the atom moment is that cup run and winning. Now, if I'm not wrong, I haven't got my note here, but I think you scored the winner in the quarterfinal against Reading.
Reading, correct, yeah.
I mean, just a snapshot, because I haven't looked at it. How's the goal?
It was from a corner, a header. We won that 1-0.
Good fight, like journalistic fact, is a brilliant soaring header, would you?
Well, yeah, you can say that. I'll take that.
Let's just leave it at that. Then you don't play in the semi against United.
Hamstring injury. Every time. I just feel like in my career, every time I got going to my top level, injury would stop me from then propelling to the next level.
Because you're straight back into the final in a team that reads Hart, Mike Richards, Vinnie Kompany, Kolarov, Julian, who was here earlier on, Gareth Barry, David Silva, Nigel de Jong, who tried to take his boot straight into Xabi Alonso's chest exactly a year before I was there. Yaya Toure, who could play a little bit. Carlos Tevez could play too. Balotelli, it's a hell of a side. It's only 1-0 against Tony Pulis of Stoke, but it's the Wembley feeling. I presume you had friends and family there. And also, irrespective of it being a smaller winning margin than some would have imagined against a difficult side, not a side anywhere near as really man for man as talented as yours, but even beyond the cup lift or a medal, actually winning is something that infuses, I think, your attitude, your behaviour, your level of training the next season, your expectations for, OK, most players go, OK, where do we go next? No, that's enough. Mm-hmm. Tell me some of those feelings, or if I'm wrong, or what did that feel like?
It felt so good because we hadn't won a trophy for so long. So no matter what happened, once the investment come in, we was the first ones to win the FA Cup and to win the Premier League. And it was the emotions were, I can't describe them. It was like a roller coaster where, you know, you're supposed to beat Stoke in the final, but you don't know if it's going to happen until it does. You look at you've got Vincent Kompany, you know, to my left. You got Jolyn Lescott, you got Kolarov, you got Silva Yard, and you're just like, we need to win this game. Like I never get nervous before any games ever, but this game I was nervous. And the derbies, I was always nervous because I knew how much it meant. And it was, the game was like it was played in slow motion. And it's like, you just want, you want it to end. You want it to end as soon as possible, just so you can see the outcome. Whether you win or lose, you just want it to be over. It's not an enjoyable feeling. No. Leading up to the game is horrible. Like the night before, you don't sleep. You're playing things in your head that you want the outcome to be. You're thinking worst case. You overthink everything, and then when you lift it, I think Balotelli got man of the match in that game. He was absolutely incredible. And after it, when you're up there, and I'm not really an emotional guy in terms of wanting to cry. I'm more happy, if you know what I mean. But you know, that night I cried. Because it was like all that I've worked for had finally come together. But 10 minutes after I cried, I was like, I want more. I want more. What can we do now?
That was a genuine, real feeling inside.
Real
you.
Feeling. What can we do now? And I'm not just saying this is real emotions. Like I want to win it every year. or what's next? Can we win the Premier League? And that FA Cup moment spurred us on to go win the league next day. Pre-season, we was in LA. We had like a team sort of bonding. We was out till 3 o'clock in the morning, probably three times, drinking, enjoying it. And we had like a group huddle and we said, lads, we're going to need everyone together because we need to win the league this year. You know, no matter how, it's going to be ups and downs. People are not going to play. You know, you're not going to play as much as you want, but make sure we win the league this year. And if we wouldn't have gone to LA in that pre-season, I don't think it would, because it brought us together. You know, like it's in the change room. So you got 25 players. Me and you might be best friends, but me and someone over there, we might not like each other because we're in the same position or we don't like that personality. But that LA trip galvanised the squad. And it's like, we've won something now. What can we do that's going to be greater than that? And the only thing that was going to be greater than winning the first trophy was winning the Premier League, because it's a massive...
And you can tie a line between that team bonding in LA to really... I mean, you've got a great way with words, and I knew that. That's why I asked you to do this, because you impress on the TV. It's like, no, I'll switch the TV on to watch a match or a great player. But there are people who talk about their sport, their profession, that make you go, yeah, I'm going to listen to this guy. You won. But when you talked about QPR at home, that it looks like he's not doing the normal thing, which is to bring you on to not just to close, but to be sure you're not. And you said, but it took over, that it's we.
Yes.
So there's a direct line between LA and sitting going, well, okay, I ain't going to put my book competitively on the pitch this day when it's won, but it's us.
It's us.
These two, they're connected, that pre-season feeling and how you felt that day, right?
100%, because every player, and that's why it's so difficult being a team sport, because end of the day, you get player of the year, you get people who get nominated for team of the year. So it's a team game, but it's individual within the team. And no matter what, any of the 25 squad we had, if they're not playing, people would react differently. Some people would be like, know their place. But in my head, I think I deserve to be playing in every single match, especially because my form was so good. So when you don't, you know, there was times, I won't mention the player, but someone on, you know, who was not in the squad that day said to me, I hope we lose. That's the emotion you're going through. And that just made me think, well, I'm devastated in not playing, but you want us to lose after all that we've been through. And I was still fuming up to this point, because I'll say it is. Zabaleta scores the first goal, man in my position, does well after I've been injured. So again, I was celebrating the goal. I was up and I didn't have my contacts. I wear glasses. So I didn't even actually see. I see someone running through. So I didn't even see who it was. I'm up. I'm jubilant. I'm happy. Then I see Zabaleta's score. I'm just like, I'm just like, what is up with my luck? What have I done? Yeah. What have I done to deserve this? And these are small problems in the scale of life. But I mean, in terms of, my career.
Yeah.
The guy that replaces me goes and scores. At this time, looked like potentially maybe it might be the winning goal.
League winning goal.
Yeah. And then obviously they score, and then they score again. And that's when, we're in this together then.
Yeah.
We're in this together. And Dzeko scores.
Yeah.
And then me and Balotelli are warming up on the side. I don't know if it was before Dzeko scored or after. He said to me, don't worry. I could even try to get a video speaking on the side. I said, because I'm like, I'm gone. Emotionally, I'm gone. I'm just like, we've given everything away. You know what I mean? And especially for me, we're going to lose it to United.
United.
You know what I mean? This can't happen. And he said to me, don't worry, we're going to win this and I'm going to change the game when I come on. And he goes and gets an assist. And I was just like, what? The only assist that he's had at Man City. He's a special player, special talent, special group, special manager. Everything, the fans, you see clips of the fans, crying in the crowd, because when I first signed with City, we was an average Premier League team. Going back before that, look at Dickoff's goal. You know, like every 10 years is a different history. Do you know what I mean? Every decade, something's different. And I got on a decent run because I got to play in the Premier League. Mm-hmm. But then people don't remember like where we've come from the last time we won a trophy. Everyone's got a different story, you know what I mean? And then to Aguero to score that. Like when I talk about special players, you know, Kompany, Silva, Aguero, it's written in the stars for them players. It really is, because that could only happen to a handful of individuals, and that's why he's one of the best strikers in world football.
Earlier on, a guy we like very much and think special and has joined you in this series, Jordan Lescott, said that when the winner went in, all he could think of, it was brilliant, man, all he could think of was running and jumping on the physios and the bench because of all the help they'd given him. He wasn't looking for the goal scorer. He wasn't looking for family or friends or the fans. It was like his overwhelming instinct was to thank you to the people who'd got him in nick by working on him throughout the season. I thought that was absolutely brilliant.
It's incredible because...
But it dovetails with the emotions you're talking about too, about one big special group.
Yeah, a lot of them physios have been there since when I started. Robin Sadler, Craig Yule, Lee Nobes joined a bit later. And they've gone from average team to Premier League winners. You know, like you know when you hear people talking now, oh, he's won a Premier League, but he wasn't that good. Not necessarily, man. Like to win a Premier League is one of the most difficult challenges you could ever face in life. The emotions, like I was taking probably 4 or 5 Voltarols at sometimes a day just so I could be out there. You know what I mean? Like, which is going to affect my future life. But would I do it again? Yeah, I'd take 10 if I knew I was going to win the Premier League.
Because you never don't play with pain, almost. Always.
Especially the challenges that I used to go in for. I used to go in for challenges that, you know, I should never even be going for. But I just love the passion. I'm one of them people who genuinely love football. I love watching it. I love playing it. I love everything to do with football. And that's why the City fans respect me here, because they know I put... If I had a bad game, if I had a good game, I'd give 100%.
We've got sponsors who help us do this. They're Bet365. They've sent us in some very interesting questions. One of them is, on Sunday the 23rd of October 2011, at approximately 2:05, did Mark Clattenburg deny you a blatant penalty against Manchester United? And how many... how many United players tried to take you down before... The final scything bell should definitely have been a spot kick.
Yes, it was definitely. But you know what it is? I was theatrical the way I went down. It was definitely a penalty.
Yeah.
100%. We didn't have VAR back then, though, did we?
Should have.
But yeah, I just love to go forward as well. I got that licence from Mancini. If we was against a team where there was open spaces, said, used to don't come back. Use your pace and power going forward. And in that game, I just unleashed what I had.
We must let you back today. I'd like, if it's possible, to end with two quick ones.
Yes,
Bet365, sure. I've asked, your best memory, the best feeling of playing international football for your country?
Well, it's a difficult question, that, because that season when I got in, when I was 18, I just missed out a player of the year to Steven Gerrard. So at 18, like, for all my flaws in my game, like, because I was a young kid who just took it by storm, I was getting loads of accolades and... A lot of people, you know, was happy with my work. So you got to say your England debut, but we didn't qualify for the Euros. I can't remember his name now, but he scored a goal and it just went under Scott Carson's arm.
Is this a Croatia game?
Yes, yeah. It was a Croatia game. And that, again, changed my whole dynamics of my career as well, because had we went to that Euros... Then I would have been on the world stage, you know what I mean? Because everyone's watching the Euros.
Yeah.
Like I was just Man City and England, but it was only qualifiers. But you know, when you go to a proper tournament, you're seen by a lot more people. And I was in the form of my life then. I was going to Euros. I would have been 18, 19, and I narrowly missed out through a 3-2 defeat. So.
In a game when the coach should have said, lads, we'll hold what we've got rather than pushing on, because at a certain stage, you've qualified.
Exactly.
Match management wasn't brilliant that day, I'm sorry, but from the coach, I'm sorry, it wasn't.
I've only really had difficult times with England, not in terms of personal, as a team. Yeah. You know, because we remembered for the team that didn't qualify for the Euros that year. Obviously, I scored against Israel, which, to score for your country, I never thought I'd even dream of. So between making my debut and scoring my goal there, my favourite moments.
Many, many people can't say that.
I know, yeah.
The last part, Micah, is this. You know, we share an outright love for the game. The game's on television a lot. Television is doing many things that are difficult for sport, that are difficult for fans. But the debate is changing, the way in which people discuss football now, the way people think about football now. Patently, you're enjoying yourself. But as an analyst, as a pundit, what's your objective? Apart from earning money, continuing mm-hmm. career, staying close to sport you love, what will you try to add? What will you try to do as part of your career as an analyst?
In terms of analysis, or me being an analyst, I don't want to change that too much, because you've got an opinion, someone else has got an opinion and all that. No matter what I say, certain things are going to have their opinion. But what I want to try and to do is to try touch on the perception of players, because all the players are perceived in such a negative way. You know, I had an Aston Martin at 19, but I was playing for England. I was playing over from 19 till 25. I had a reputation of being called the Blinking. And a lot of people who know me was like, that's not you. You like cars. You're a humble lad. You know what I mean? Like, you'd like to go out occasionally, but why have you got this stigma? You're the Blinking. Do you know what I mean? Whereas James Milner, who had a Ferrari, but because he's seen as someone who's just hardworking and an ultra pro, he can drive a Ferrari, and he's not got that stigma of being, you know, a blinking or flashy or a show off. Do you know what I mean? So what I want to do when I'm on TV, well, if you want to talk about he's not a good player, he's a position could have been there, fair enough, that's fine. But don't attack people's personal life without knowing the facts. And that's what I want to change. I want to change the perception of footballers. Because you'll see it. You didn't know me. You see me with Darren Fletcher.
Correct.
And you was like, oh, I like the way he talks about it. Do you know what I mean? But
spot on.
You wouldn't have not known that until after I played football. And there's loads of players just like me who can talk about football, who can be articulate, who can be more articulate than I can ever be. But you won't know that unless, you know, someone is painting them in the right light. And that's what I want to change.
So, Micah Richards, thanks for your generosity. We've both laughed quite a lot in this.
You always got to have a little bit of fun with it, haven't you?
You're going to be really good at this next chunk of your career. We all wish, you wish, that maybe another 6-7 years playing. But now that you're starting on doing this, it's going to be fun for you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Big Interview. It's produced by me, which sounds egotistical, but it's also true, Graham Hunter, and Back Page. Our music is by Beer Jacket, who else? Editing by Charlie McGarry. Thank you to our hosts at Acast and our loyal sponsors at Bet365. We're also supported by our socios. Find out how to become a socio, how to support us, at patreon.com/Graham Hunter. Here endeth the lesson.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.